ever wondered about how or if you can improve egg quality? Well, you can. NIDA truly supports women whether you're trying to conceive, pregnant, postpartum, and beyond. For those trying to conceive, NIDA's egg quality support is designed to support egg cell health as they develop into mature eggs. Improving your egg quality can support fertility outcomes. I highly recommend women who are thinking about having another baby in the next year or so learn more about egg quality and check out NIDA's line of fertility supplements, including their egg quality duo at thisisnida.com. Get up to 40% off NIDA's plans with code VBAC. That is V-B-A-C.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the VBAC link. Today, we have our friend Caitlin. And she is a mother of three daughters, just a little newborn as well, like just a couple months old. At this point, she is a mother of three, like I said, entirely different birth stories with all three. So I'm excited for her to be able to share her stories. I feel like we see so many comments within our community or within the podcast episodes or just on Instagram, we get messages where it's like, hey, I had a birth that, you know, it seemed like they did every possible thing that they could do to get my baby out and my baby still didn't get out. Do you think that's just my fate? Do you think I could have a vaginal birth? And I feel like if you are one of those people, you're going to definitely want to hear these stories today. Like she said, they're all three different stories, but they're all great stories and stories that led her to make really big decisions with her vaginal birth after two C-sections. She said she is a Christ follower and he made my last birth a redemptive one despite the obstacles. So she wanted to share her stories today because your stories, as she has listened to the people who have recorded their stories, really impacted her in such a positive way. She talks a little bit about how she shared with her husband and how she was just like, I really want to be on that podcast. And here she is today sharing her stories. She is a vaginal birth after two cesarean mama. So VBA2C mama. And I wanted to replace our review today with a educational topic of vaginal birth after two C-sections. This is a few years ago, we got a message that said, I'm contemplating having one more child after two C-sections. I've moved to Utah where I know I can easily find a doula or a birthing center that would support VBAC after two though. I don't really know all the risks. I have friends that say, don't try it. It's too dangerous. I'm not pregnant yet, but I just wanted to give some dialogue about it. And I'm really wanting to know if it is possible. We get messages like this seriously all the time, you guys. And if you're one of them that like, I've had two C-sections or maybe even three, and you're wondering, is it possible? Is it safe? Should I do it? It's a lot more common to hear the words, no, it's too dangerous. I know I did when I was wanting to have a vaginal birth after two C-sections. And so I wanted to just share a little bit about the evidence on VBA2C here so you could have a little bit more insight. And of course, we will have the show notes with links to all of these resources. Okay, so let's just try to talk a little bit about the risk of having a vaginal birth after two C-sections. When it comes to VBAC, I'm sure you have already caught on by now that uterine rupture is the main risk and thing that's discussed, the main focus on VBAC, and rightfully so. We talk about this in many episodes, but we want to say it again. We recognize that uterine rupture happens. It is extremely rare. It's a small risk, but it's still a risk. And we don't want to pretend that it doesn't happen because even though uterine rupture occurs in the small amount of people, when it happens to someone, it feels very gigantic. Okay. when it comes to uterine rupture, the chances of anything being really catastrophic are also low. But when you are deciding if VBAC is right for you, you need to assess and see if the percentage or of the risk that you are taking is worth it to you. To some, it's going to be a no-brainer, and to some, it's going to be a no way, I don't want to, and that is okay. So let's talk a little bit about uterine rupture risks after two cesareans. You guys, the evidence is not very great out there. Like, the studies vary a little bit, and there hasn't been any really large studies. However, what we do have shows that there may be a slight increase in rates in uterine rupture for VBAC after two C-sections. So approximately like 1.5, like 1.4, depending on the study, 1.7, 1.8, less than 2% chance of uterine rupture. ACOG still suggests that VBAC after two cesareans is a very reasonable and safe option and shouldn't be something that's contraindicated. So know that it is definitely something that is reasonable and safe. Now, when it comes to VBAC after three plus cesareans, the evidence is really just not there. There's just not a lot of studies or any studies out there for more than two. And even with the two, we have the studies, but there's not a lot of people in the studies. So you have to kind of take the studies with what we have, take your confidence, and decide if that is something that is reasonable to you. But ACOG specifically says that it is reasonable to consider women with two previous low transverse cesarean deliveries to be candidates for TOLAC, and it's important to cancel them based on the combination of other factors. Now, there, with that said, we're going to even hear about it a little bit here within this story, but there are providers out there that may not want you to be back, and they may make that clear, and they may make it sound scarier than it is. So I encourage you to go out there and decide what is best for you. Choosing repeat cesarean does not eliminate your chances of uterine rupture. I know that's something that not a lot of people know, so I wanted to throw that out there as well. Yes, it is a lot lower, but it does not eliminate your chances. And so I encourage you to go out, do the research, check out the show notes today. We're going to have links for these studies and blogs. And of course, today's storyteller, Caitlin, is going to share her VBAC after two C-section stories with you.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
All right, Miss Caitlin, I really can't wait for you to share your story. I think VBAC in general is like such a passion. Well, I don't even think. I know. Here we are, right? But VBAC after two C-sections, I love hearing stories like those because I think, and that's where I've been, right? VBAC after two C-sections. And I just hear hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of women, like literally hundreds, saying, I've had two C-sections. That's it. That's my fate. I can't have another, opportunity. And I always just want to say, yes, you can. It's totally possible. Just like VBAC after one, really statistically, the risks are quite similar. So it's quite safe still. And even suggested by ACOG, they say, like, just because you've had two C-sections, it doesn't mean you can't have a trial of labor, as they call it. But so many people don't know it. And many doctors don't support it, which I know we're going to talk a little bit about the lack of support that you received, or they're just not even offering the option. So remind me where you're at.
I am in Canton, Georgia, so like north of Atlanta.
Okay, so how is VBAC after multiple cesareans received there by providers? Is it well or is it not so
It's how
good?
you would think. I think in most places it's not received
Well.
very well. Luckily, I just feel like the home birth community is obviously very supportive, so, and I'll get into that later. But yeah, I had a really hard time finding someone who was going to support me because my original plan was to have hospital birth, hospital VBAC. I just felt like in the beginning when I found out that I was pregnant, that that was going to be the safest place for me to go, right? Especially since I knew or felt like at the time it was risky to have the. So I felt like without a doubt, I wanted a hospital birth. So yeah, it was difficult to find the right provider for that.
It's so hard because we're not alone, right? Like even in Utah, I would say we're pretty spoiled here. We have a pretty good population of providers who are supportive within VBAC and VBAC after multiple cesareans. But even with that said, it was really hard to find like the right provider that was really going to give me a fair shot at having a vaginal birth. So it just sucks. And that's something that I love about this community is we all understand that. We all connect with that. And then together we support one another. All right. Well, let's see. So you have the two cesareans and then a VBAC. So of course you couldn't have had a VBAC without a VBAC after two C-sections without those two C-sections. So let's hear about those stories.
Okay, so I now have three beautiful daughters. My first I had in 2019. I will say I have been blessed with just really easy pregnancies with all three of mine. Felt great throughout my whole first pregnancy, but I just feel like I was very naive to how birth really works. So I really didn't do a whole lot of research. I remember going to like one birth class with my husband. I stopped working out probably 20 weeks in, feeling like I was going to hurt the baby if I did, wait. And so I was just really naive and felt like it was pretty standard the way that, babies come out. Your body was just going to know what to do and you have your baby. But of course, I was very, very wrong about that. So yeah, great pregnancy. But then I go in for it was the day before her due date. I went in for just a regular checkup, and my blood pressure was slightly elevated. I do remember it not being like a cause for concern. I just remember her saying, it's a little elevated, which I assumed was pretty normal because you're about to, have your first kid. You're naturally a little bit more nervous. So she basically asked me, like, you're already here. Tomorrow's a due date. Do you want to go ahead and just get induced? And this kind of goes with like not doing enough research. Of course, I didn't really know how Pitocin really worked. I just figured I'm ready to get this baby out. That sounds great. You're the doctor. You tell me, trusted her and was like, yeah, let's go ahead and get the ball rolling. So we went to the hospital. I got induced right around 1 o'clock that afternoon. And I remember the contractions with the Pitocin were horrible. So I really didn't last. I don't really remember how long I was experiencing labor after the Pitocin, but it wasn't long. I think it was like an hour or two. And then I decided to get the epidural. So of course, this birth story is like your typical cascade of interventions, right? It's like one thing after the other, just like a recipe for C-section. So I get the epidural, that stalls things. So I was in labor for a total of about 24 hours at this point since the Pitocin started. So we're now, on her due date. And at this point, after about 24 hours, I'm fully dilated, ready to push. And mind you, they have me on my back this entire time. So I didn't even know having an epidural, you could even move positions.
That's interesting that they didn't even
They didn't even
like
mention it.
mention it or hey, like you've been here for a while, let's rotate you.
And I just assumed because I couldn't feel my legs that that's just what I had to do. So I'm on my back for the full, it's whatever the hospital policy. They'd only let you push for, I think it was like 3 or 4 hours. So I pushed for that entire 3 or 4 hours on my back. So I'm experiencing back labor. It was pretty horrible. And for some reason, she just would not come out. They couldn't, she was in the ideal position. So once I get to that limit of pushing and I'm spent, you know, of course I'm just eating ice chips for 24 hours because they won't let you eat or drink. So I have no energy. And I of course wanted to try everything before this the happened to do a C-section. So though there's one doctor at the hospital who still did forceps. So I'm like, sure, let's try it. So he came in and they said that he had a 99% success rate with forceps. And he tried 3 different times to get her out. And at that point, he's like, I can't keep pulling on her head. So, and my husband recalls, I wasn't quite crowning, but he recalls seeing like the top of her head. So we knew that we were so close. And at that point, he was like, there's nothing else I can really do for you. So the little bit that was out, they basically had to
Put
push
back
her
in.
head and then had to do the emergency C-section. So as you can imagine, that was super traumatic for both me and my husband. The meds that they had me on had me so shaky that I couldn't even hold her for like the first hour or two of her life. I remember at one point they even gave me fentanyl for pain relief, which looking back, I'm like, that is crazy that they would even that they could even give that to a pregnant, you know, a pregnant mom.
They still do in labor too.
Crazy to me. And I'm like, why would I even say like, yeah, let's go for it. So between the fentanyl and, you know, all the meds I had going through me, it was just a horrible experience. And so, yeah, I never got that skin to skin with her. My husband couldn't cut the cord. Everything was just very fast. And I just remember postpartum that really affecting my milk supply. And of course, I had some postpartum depression following after that. So overall, my experience was not fun at all with that first birth. Fast forward to my second. This is in 2021 when I had my second daughter. And this story is pretty short and sweet. I had planned the C-section. Looking back at it now, you know, I kick myself for not trying to have that VBAC because I feel like it made it more difficult for my third having, you know, going for a VBAC after two. But you only know what you know at the time, right? So my mind was just not ready to have to go through that again. And it was so traumatic that I was like, let's just go ahead and schedule, make it easy. I picked the date, walked right in. Everything was fine with the birth. Although I will say, afterwards, about a few days after we got home from the hospital, I randomly got diagnosed with postpartum preeclampsia, which I didn't know was a thing at the time. I'm like, postpartum, like everything was fine my whole pregnancy. So I had to go back in the hospital, do the magnesium drip. That was horrible. My husband had to bring my newborn in so I can try to breastfeed her. And shortly after that, she gets RSV, which put her in
Oh
the
my
hospital for like 3
goodness.
or 4 days as a 2-week-old. So needless to say, you know, I went into this second birth thinking it was going to be just short and sweet and quick and, you know, we're done and over with it. But it didn't exactly turn out that way either. It was also a very difficult postpartum with breastfeeding and just postpartum depression again. So, 2024, I get pregnant in the beginning of this year with my third. And I just knew right off the bat that, like, okay, I'm going to do things different this time. I'm going to get my redemptive story. So, yeah, I just did things a lot different. I knew that I wanted to try for the VBAC, but I wasn't exactly sure, like, did I want to do it completely unmedicated? Did I, you know, hospital birth, home birth? I just knew that I really wanted to fight for this VBAC. I did tons of research. I probably took care of myself more this pregnancy than I did with my first two, as far as just eating really healthy. I worked out 5, 6 days a week. I just took care of my mental and spiritual health. And I ended up hiring a doula, which I never did before. So between the doula and I was seeing a chiropractor regularly, I was doing my monthly massages, my pelvic floor therapy, acupuncture, cold plunging. I mean, I did it all. just because I knew, you know, I had to mentally and physically be really prepared for this.
Hey, mamas, we're going to take a quick moment to look a little deeper into egg quality. If I'm being super honest, it wasn't until I discovered Needed that I learned about ways to help our egg quality and that it was even important. Anyone with me? Well, I just want to give a shout out to Needed for bringing this information forward and understanding all that goes into having optimal health in fertility, birthing, and postpartum journeys. The Egg Quality Duo pairs two essential products, the Egg Quality Support and the COQ10 to support optimal egg quality. Together, they offer targeted, optimally dosed antioxidants to improve egg quality and support fertility outcomes. The egg quality is formulated by a perinatal health practitioners to help support you during your preconception period and conception. They're also nicely paired with Needed's complete plan. The VBAC link has a VIP code to get up to 40% off select plans. You can visit thisisneeded.com and type in VBAC, that is V-B-A-C, at checkout to get a special discount. They have fast shipping too, so you will be on your way to supporting your egg quality in no time. Let's take a moment to talk about Coterie wipes, because they're just as amazing as their diapers. These wipes are made from 100% plant-based fibers and are up to 30% larger than most other brands, making them perfect for even the messiest of situations. They're also hypoallergenic and dermatologist tested, so they're safe for newborns and even eczema-prone skin. One of our team members shared that these wipes have been a game changer, gentle enough for delicate skin, but durable enough to get the job done with fewer wipes. They've even earned the National Eczema Association's Seal of Acceptance. You guys, you can pair these with Coterie diapers for a high-performance diaper duo. And do not forget, you can get 20% off with code VBAC20 of your first order of $40 or more. Add a pack of these incredible wipes to your order to see the difference.
So I will mention in the beginning of this pregnancy, I was still with my OB who delivered my second. So she was still affiliated with like a massive hospital nearby. And pretty soon after I found out that I was pregnant, it was like a no, you cannot have a VBAC, like hospital policy. We had to do a C-section. So I knew that I had to switch providers at that point. So I did more research and I found this midwife in the area who she delivered at hospitals, but she was VBAC supportive. And she had a lot of great reviews and I decided to go with her. This is about 20 weeks. So about halfway through, we decided to switch and go with her. And this should have been a red flag from the beginning because part of her contract was because she's affiliated with this hospital, I had to go into labor by 41 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Because they wouldn't induce me for obvious reasons for the two cesareans. So she was like, yeah, I'd be happy to do it so long as you naturally go into labor by 41 weeks. I don't know why that wasn't a huge red flag for me in the beginning. Because I'm like, no pressure, right? Like, sure, let's just naturally go into labor.
Yeah, and you know, you're like, well, oh, like, you're giving me a whole week. Like, people say 40 weeks is my due date. So sure, I can have a baby by 41 weeks.
Exactly.
Even though sometimes that doesn't happen.
Well, and at this point, I had not gone into natural labor before. So I'm like, I don't know when I would go and, you know, I didn't know what that looked like for me. So, but I just felt like because I had done a lot of research that I was just hopeful and I felt like I couldn't really find another doctor who would support me. So I was just like, this is the closest.
This is what I get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And mind you, she, you know, doctors like that, she considered herself, it was more of like a private midwife practice. So everything was out of pocket with her. So she was not cheap. So from about 20 weeks on, I had a very normal pregnancy. I went in for my 34-week checkup, and she was taking my vitals, and my blood pressure was abnormally high. And she had me taking a blood pressure log at home because of the postpartum preeclampsia after my second. So just to be safe, she wanted me to be taking it once a day so that she could look at my log, see what it was like at home. So she takes it, it's high, and she's taking it again and again. So of course, naturally, I'm getting like a little nervous and it's getting higher. And then she's like, well, why don't I step out in the hallway and you take it and I'll come back in just a minute. So I'm like, okay, now I have this pressure knowing that you're standing outside the hallway.
Uh-huh.
The pressure's not going to go down. So after that, she was pretty quick to jump to, she wanted to take some blood work and check my urine, which there was some protein in my urine. So of course, this naturally was kind of the start of what could be preeclampsia, but I knew that a few things had to line up in order to officially be diagnosed with it. And she was very quick to jump to like, I'm sending you to a high-risk specialist. I need you to go to the hospital so that they can do serial blood pressure readings. I want them to check your blood work, all that. So that kind of, you know, escalated really quick and kind of put me in like a downward spiral from that appointment, because everything had gone great and I had been doing all the right things. And I'm like, why all of a sudden would I have protein in my urine? And so kind of more so to please her, I go to the hospital and they do hours of blood pressure readings, which they did go down after that. My blood work came back fine, but there were still like trace amounts of protein in my urine. So my husband had called that midwife just to kind of fill her in, kind of ask some questions. And he was like, you know, can you shoot it to me straight? Kind of tell me what you're thinking. And without any hesitation, she was like, oh yeah, she's not going to make it past 37 weeks, like with another C-section. And he was like, okay, like that escalated quickly. Like, why are we jumping to that? And you could tell that she just had it made up in her mind. Like, this is what we're going to do. She's going in. And it was frustrating for me because I had spoken to her on the phone like an hour prior and she didn't mention that at all. So it's like, she kind of had it set, like, you're going to have a C-section in 3 weeks. So that was kind of the final straw for me, because I just felt not supported at all. We had, you know, given her all of this money, and I kind of, and part of it was my fault. By like putting her up on a pedestal, like she's going to be the one to, you know, give me this VBAC, which I know that no one can guarantee anything, but I just felt like she did not fight at all for me to like, hey, let's get to the bottom of this. Let's figure out what you're eating. Let's see what, you know, what we can do to try to get your blood pressure down.
Yeah. There's a lot, cause there's a lot of things. I mean, there really are a lot of natural things you can do to see if that helps, and putting yourself in a different situation where you're not like feeling the tension.
Right.
Of, yeah. Yeah.
And at that point I kind of knew, I'm like, I really don't think that a hospital birth is for me, because I'm like, I just realized having this white coat syndrome, because anytime I go into a doctor setting, my blood pressure would always be high. So I just knew, I'm like, what makes me think that when I'm in labor and things are like high stress, going into a hospital was going to be the best option for me. You know, I could just see it now, my labor being stalled and, you know, just with all the beeping and the nurses that I don't know. And I just knew that that just wasn't for me anymore. So thank God for my sweet doula. She referred me to her midwife that she had used a few years prior, and she had since become really close with, just in the birth community. And she was like, I don't know if she's even available, but she was like, just talk to her. And if anything, she can kind of put your mind at ease. So I give her a call and immediately just felt like a sense of relief talking to her and just how supportive she was and encouraging and not fear mongering with this whole high blood pressure thing, you know? So we spoke and she, thank God for her, was willing to take me on, even though she's a very seasoned midwife. And she told me, she was like, I don't take moms this late in the game. Like, I wouldn't be able to form a relationship with you, but you know, I have sympathy for you. And she felt like the system had failed me. And she was like, I want to fight for you to have this feedback. So I felt like it was a total God thing, just how everything lined up with, she had one spot in October available.
Wow.
And it just so happened to be right in between her other mom's due dates, so none of them overlapped. So she was willing to take me on as, and this is at 35 weeks. So it was a very, as you can imagine, a super stressful last few weeks making these big decisions. I had to walk away from all of that money from the other midwife who refused to give us any sort of refund,
Really?
even
Like,
though
so, 'cause, what?
didn't even, we paid her, we pay everything up front for her
Yeah,
to,
it's like a global fee, right?
like deliver my baby, but we didn't even get to that. And she was like, she wouldn't even give us a dime.
Really? Interesting.
So, yeah, so it was just stressful on both of us financially and just a lot on me mentally because I'm like, okay, if I'm going to do this home birth, we're spending more money and like
Yep.
all of this happens. And then I end up having to do it, getting a C-section again,
Yeah.
it's a lot to consider, but we prayed a lot and just felt like, God, I think set that up for us, for me to meet my doula, to now meet this new midwife, and it just kind of fell into place. So that was pretty cool. And let's see. Oh, and so she was gonna, do some work with me to try to get my blood pressure down because she, like me, thought that this high blood pressure was stress induced. She was like, based off of your blood work and everything else, she was like, I really don't think you have preeclampsia. And what I realized is the amount of working out that I was doing, I was eating healthy, but I was not eating enough. And I find out that, because I'm not compensating for the calorie
Calorie
deficit.
out.
I'm not having enough protein. I'm not having enough electrolytes and salt in my diet. So then I came across, I think I heard it through one of your episodes about the Brewer diet.
Yeah,
So that's what I tried. I was like, I'm gonna up my protein by a lot, taking a lot of like Celtic sea salt. I even saw a therapist to help me with like my anxiety that I was feeling, and just talking about, the past pregnancies. And sure enough, I mean, within a week or two, my blood pressure was beautiful, back down to,
Good.
to what it should have been. So fast forward. So yeah, so this is the day before the due date. I get woken up probably around midnight with my first contractions. And they keep progressing. I get up around 3 in the morning and I take a bath and just kind of walk around. I didn't want to wake my husband up yet. So I'm all excited because I'm like, it's her due date. Surely she's going to be here today. But I'm excited. I have like the birth pool, prepped and ready to go. I just feel super calm that I'm at home and that I'm able to just labor at home in, in my happy place. So what I thought was actual labor ended up being about 2.5 days of epidural labor, which my husband and I had no idea what that was until my midwife told me, and we had to like Google it and look up YouTube videos of what is epidural labor. And come to find out, like I think it's like 30 to 40% of moms experience it. And it could be across the board with like, your contractions are spaced far apart and they're not as intense, but it could happen for a couple days. Mine were like 3 to 5 minutes apart constantly for 2.5 days. Very, very intense.
So they never piddled out and then came back in. Because that's like stereotypical prodromal labor where they happen at night a lot of the times. They come in, they're consistent, they're even pretty strong, and then they kind of go away in the morning. So you just did 2 days of
Days
contracting.
nonstop, and because at that point, my midwife, they normally don't come by until it's like getting close, right? So my midwife, my doula's there, we're, and so I'm going through, I think it was after the first day was pretty intense. And so I'm thinking like it's gotta happen soon. And she asked if I wanted to be checked. So I'm like, sure, let's go ahead and check me. And I was 2 centimeters after like 24 hours. So I was like, oh my gosh, I thought it was like a lot further along at this point. And another day passes. And it's kind of like she comes and goes. You know, they were there for like the first day and they're like, we're going to go home. I work with the contractions with my husband. And then they came back. My midwife came back and she checked me again. And this is about 48 hours. And she was like, you're not going to like what I have to say. Oof. She was like, you are still 2 centimeters. And I was like, at that point, I kind of just broke down because I'm like, I am almost 2 days of this labor and this is miserable and I have not progressed at all.
Yeah.
And then I feel like God had some mercy on me that next morning. So this is like 2 full days. And then, that next morning I woke up and then that's when the contractions were spaced out maybe to an hour. So I had, every 30 minutes at this point.
Mm-hmm.
That was a relief because I could at least get some sleep because I had zero sleep for 8 hours. My midwife encouraged me and my husband to get out of the house, kind of go walk around. We went and got breakfast. So I had a few hours of just catching up on sleep and just trying to live my normal life. But then about 5 p.m. that afternoon or that evening was when they came back on super strong. Like right away, they were like 2-3 minutes apart. So then I knew, okay, like this has got to be, active labor. Mm-hmm. So finally, the midwife and doula come back and we are doing everything. I was doing the side, walking up the stairs, down the stairs. I probably took like 25 showers at this point. I took baths. I was sitting on the toilet for the dilation station. I was bouncing on my birth ball. I was laying in bed, side laying with the peanut ball. I mean, they had me moving all over my house. And so finally, she checked me again. And at this point, I remember this part's kind of foggy for me, but I remember it was just so painful and so hard for me to get through those last contractions that I just remember yelling, like, I just can't do it. I can't do it anymore.
Mm.
And they were like, yes, you can. You can do this. You've made it this far. My midwife got pretty ticked at I kept saying it. And she was like, if you keep saying this, I have to grant your wish. Like, we have to go in if you're going to keep saying you can't do this. She was like, because only you can do this, right?
Yeah.
I was just so ready to, like, throw the towel in. I was just, like, I was spent. So she was like, well, let me check you again. And at this point, half of my cervix was completely dilated, and the other half was at a 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that was possible to have
baby's head. Something's going on baby's head, which also relates to prodromal labor.
So I was at least thankful that like it had progressed, but I'm like, what the heck? Like I'm waiting on half my cervix to dilate. Mm-hmm. Like, so yeah, at this point, my husband had to come in and kind of have like a come to Jesus moment with me because I'm telling him like, I want to be done. I want to go in. And he's like, you did not do all this work for nothing. You are so close. Like, please just stick it out, this next like hour or two, like you can do this. So finally they had me in the shower. My poor husband was in the shower with me for like an hour doing these like squatting. Like he was like holding my body up, trying to get my pelvic floor to open because I was just so tense and like shaking and I could not relax. And they were like, you have to relax in order to get baby to descend. So at this moment, this is kind of the turning point for me because I was ready to give up still. And I remember we had the Christian hypnobirthing app on and my doula and midwife kind of left us alone, gave us some time together. And my husband like forcing me to say these affirmations out loud and like praying over me and just being like, you need to say this. Like, you need to say, I can do this. Like, God created my body to do this. Like, I don't need to be scared. And so that was pretty, pretty cool. Like a bonding moment for my husband and I. He was just so strong for me. And I felt like that really got me through it. And I think I just realized how powerful my words really are. Because when I'm speaking this like negative energy out loud and just saying, I can't do this. I can't do this. I could feel my body getting more tense. I could feel the contraction getting harder and more intense. So I just kind of had to like snap out of it and realize like my words are so powerful and the things that I speak out loud, speak truth. So that last little bit really helped me to kind of get over that hump of just like pure misery. So we're in the shower for about an hour. We get out and she wants me to go back on the toilet to try to dilate some more. So she's listening to baby's heartbeat and she calmly was just like, okay, baby's not really liking this position. Why don't we try something else? So then we go over to the counter and I'm leaning over the bathroom counter having another contraction. She's listening to the heartbeat and she's like, baby's not really liking this either. Why don't we go over here? Try this, try this. So every position we were in, she was like, we need to lay you on the bed and see if this helps. And laying on the bed, like the side laying position was the worst for me. It was the most painful, but that seemed to be what was helping with the dilating. And at this point, I remember actually hearing the heartbeat and it was pretty slow. And I remember kind of, you know, having a sense of just, I mean, I was scared and hearing her whisper to my husband, like, we need to transfer her just for the safety of the baby. So you can imagine it was pretty devastating to hear that.
Yeah.
Know that like I had pushed through those really difficult hours, even though I wanted to give up, and to hear that we had to go in anyways. But a part of me had some relief because I knew that, okay, this means that baby's coming soon. And that it wasn't because of my decision. You know, I've really regretted, obviously looking back now, I would have really regretted making the decision to give up and to go in to have the C-section. And of course, I always told myself, regardless, you know, I just wanted to have this baby safely. So I knew in the back of my mind that going into a hospital was an option. So at this point, it's about 3 in the morning. So we transferred to the hospital. Luckily, it was like a 5-minute drive. We get there and, you know, in this scenario is like everything that I dreaded from being in a hospital. It's like we walk into a room and there's 20 people all staring at me. The light, you know, all the lights are on, beeping. They're sticking me with needles. They're, you know, taking my blood pressure, all the things. And I really lucked out with this. Or let me back up. The hospital that we go to was the hospital that my original midwife did the C-section with my second. So it was funny how it kind of came full circle where I ended up back at this hospital. And my midwife was very surprised that I was able to have her vaginally, because she was like, this hospital does not let moms, unless the baby's like coming out, this hospital is very strict about be back after 2. So with that being said, by the time I'm on the bed, the new midwife comes in. She was so nice, so supportive. She checked me and she was like, you're completely dilated. So she was like, if you want to go ahead and push, we can go for it.
And a baby at this point recovered, no problems, heart rate issues, or?
From what I remember, I think her heart rate was still kind of going up and down, but I think because I was so close and I was completely dilated, she was like, let's just go ahead. And if you want to push, let's go ahead and, you know, get her out. So I flip over, I'm on all fours. And within about 5 minutes, it was like 4 pushes, she was out. So it was like the quickest. So within about 30 minutes of being in the hospital, she was here.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
So all that happened so fast. And she came out with, I think they call it nuchal hand.
Oh, other hand up by her face?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So we figured out, okay, that's why she wouldn't descend. And that's probably why half my cervix was dilated and the other half wasn't, because of her, you know, the way that her head. So yeah, that's how I was able to achieve my VBAC after 2. And it was just such an amazing experience. And I was just so thankful that I at least got to experience all that at home, and then how quick the delivery was in the hospital. So I'm just so thankful that it happened the way that it did, and I was able to have my unmedicated VBAC.
Yeah. You know, and thinking about all the movement that had to go or that had to happen for you to get from home into the car, out of the car, into the hospital, figuring out things as you're like, you know, checking in. There were a lot of different position changes there
that probably also helped your baby kind of navigate down, even with a new goal hand, kind of maybe got the pressure off of the cord that maybe would have been putting pressure or making the baby's heart rate down. So it's like all those things that you did needed to happen for you to get to that end result.
Exactly. Yep. That's what
Yeah.
my wife said. She was like, I think it was the moving from the car to the room is what probably did it.
Movement really is so impactful. And it's, I mean, you were doing all the things at home too. You were moving, you were, it just took so much time and then the right position, you
Right.
know. So I think it's so good to note that, like, you did all the things you could at home and then plans changed. And sometimes that happens. Do you
Yeah.
have any advice to anyone who may be planning an out-of-hospital birth or I don't know, any advice for them that in case things don't go their way, or someone who may be processing and working through that, like, this isn't what I wanted, this is what happened type of thing. Because, you know, birth does, it does have different paths, and every birth is different.
Yeah.
So, yeah, do you have any advice to anyone?
I don't know. I think just being really open-minded and knowing, like, I listen to so many of your episodes and just not a single story is the same, right? Like you said, that you can do all of the prep work, you can do everything, but that's not a guarantee that you're going to have the birth that you want. So I think I tried not to put so much emphasis and pressure on, like, this is how I had to have this baby. Ultimately, all we really want is to have a healthy baby, right? So yeah, I think between that and just, I felt like I had all the reasons to just say, hey, let's go the easy route and just get the third cesarean because that's easier, right?
Yeah, you guys are missing it, but she's doing air quotes with her
Yeah,
easy ray
it's
and her
true, right? I
easier.
know there's no easy way to get a baby out. I know that. But yeah, I think it was just so redemptive for me. It was
Yeah.
just, and I just think for any moms, like for me in the beginning, I'm like, is it safe? Or like, can I really do this? And like the answer is yes. If you have, I've for me at least, I had to have all the faith in the world, and I really had to lean in into my just mental and spiritual side because a lot of it's physical. But what I realized with this birth is it's like 99% mental. And then the rest, your body does know what to do, but so much of it is mental. So I feel like having a lot of the mental prep work really helped. And ultimately, having the right providers.
Yeah.
I heard so many times in your episodes of mom switching. And that really gave me the confidence to be like, okay, it's not too late to switch. Like 35 weeks, yes, that's stressful, but I really, really wanted this so bad that I knew that I had to find a provider who not only would support me, but who would work well with my doula and who had a lot of the same like morals as me. I had two very spiritual women, by my side that was so helpful. So really just, yeah, encouraging moms to just really do research and find the right providers for you that are going to make you feel, confident and that you can do it. So.
I love that you said that. Feeling confident, it's really so important. If we doubt our body's ability to do what we believe it should be able to do and can do, if we have any doubt, that can impact us so much. And like you said, like working through it physically, but also emotionally, you went through, you were recognizing, oh, I've got these anxieties. Like, let's work through this, even though it's at the end of pregnancy. It's really never too late to start working through it. We have a YouTube channel that we have like a fear release activity on, and I highly suggest people check that out. We'll have it in the show notes because it's such a great thing to dial in, recognize your fear, and know that fear is normal. Like, it's okay to have fear. You don't. You're not bad for being scared or questioning or, you know,
Right.
anything, but processing through it by learning the facts, by understanding what's going on, by doing the things that you feel like you need to do to check your box of I've done all the things. And sometimes that is a late transfer. And it can be scary. It can be really scary. And it can be difficult. It not only scary, but difficult. It can be really hard to find someone to take you in the end of pregnancy. And I mean, yours lined up so perfectly. Like you said, it just seemed like it was exactly what it needed to be. But yeah, I think back of what if you didn't leave? Like, what would have happened with your blood pressure? What would have happened with you mentally, you know, and what decisions you would have made, or what decisions you would have felt you had to make?
Yep.
Maybe you didn't want to make those, but you were feeling forced or guilted or fear-mongered into making. And it's like that, it sounds silly, but it always makes me wonder when I hear stories like this, like if you didn't do this, how would it panned out? And for me, for my vaginal birth after 2 C-section, I truly believe that if I didn't make, mine wasn't as late as yours, but that later on transfer, looking back at how my birth unfolded, I confidently feel that it wouldn't have happened for me. It really wouldn't have happened. And in the beginning of this whole episode, you talked about, you're like, hey, like I just kind of, I went into it and was like, this is normal. Birth is normal. It happens, right? Like, why do I need to like fully educate myself? And then you're like, and then I learned that that wasn't the case. And in so many ways, I'm like, yeah, it's not that birth isn't normal and doesn't just happen. It does. It's that there's so much to go into it, specifically in the medical system. Now, not shaming the medical system, but really there's so much extra that we have to learn because it can impact the normal way that our babies come out, right? We were built to have our babies come out. And a lot of the times the things that happen in those situations can lead to those cesareans or the cascade, as people say. And it's not that our body wasn't willing to do the normal thing or it wasn't possible. It's just that we were let down. We were really let down. And so we have to educate ourselves in what physiological birth looks like, and then what the system over here wants to add to it.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where it gets tricky. That's where it gets really tricky. But you've learned along the way and you've grown along the way. And in 4 pushes, you had your baby after having a situation where you were having forceps, right? Multiple attempts, 3, I think you said, attempts of forceps, and it didn't work. And a lot of people could feel defeated and truly believe their pelvis is too small at that point, or truly believe that their babies are too big to get out of their pelvis because they went through this big event where, I mean, they had a provider on the other side helping and it didn't pan out, right? And here you are, 2 babies later, but still here you are proving that that's possible. And with a nuchal hand, like that's a pretty difficult push too. So you should be so proud of yourself. And Women of Strength, if you are listening, know that if you had a situation similar to Caitlin's where maybe your baby didn't come out, maybe your baby didn't descend, maybe your cervix didn't dilate all the way, that doesn't mean it's going to happen the next time.
Yeah. And it was just so, so redemptive at the end too, just to be able to experience that skin to skin, to be able to have my husband cut the cord. And it just made such a big difference. And even now being a few weeks postpartum, I don't have any postpartum depression. I am able to nurse my baby. And it's pretty awesome to see just when you fully surrender your birth to God and just to see, even though it doesn't always pan out the way that you had planned, this was his plan for this baby. And just to be on the other side of it now is just pretty cool and rewarding. And even being on this podcast, I remember telling my husband, I had him listen to a couple of your episodes just to get him on board with the whole home birth thing. And even back after 2. So he listened to quite a few of them with me. And I remember telling him, I said, I'm going to be on that podcast one day.
I love it.
It's this birth, I will have this baby vaginally. And I said, I will be on that podcast. So yeah, it's pretty cool just to be here now. And, you know, and of course my hopes are just to encourage other moms, just like how so many of your episodes encouraged me and really gave me the confidence to not just educate myself, but just to know that I can do it. So yes, I'm very, very thankful for that.
Yeah, I think that this podcast is such a great place to gather that confidence and feel empowered, because when you're in that situation where you're like, oh, it's not feeling right, I'm late in my pregnancy, I probably can't transfer. And then you hear, wait, women all over the world are doing it.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, like I had an induction that didn't work, you know, I probably couldn't do it. And then you hear all these successful induction stories or successful vaginal births spontaneously after a induction that ended in the cesarean. It's like, wait, okay, I can't, like, they're not alone.
I'm not alone in this. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I'm not alone. They're not alone. Here we are together in this beautiful community. And yeah, I think this podcast is just one of my favorite places to be and listen to. It's funny because I record them and I hear your stories, and then I can't wait for podcast day because I want to go back and I want to listen to the story again. And every single time I hear something different, there's a new message. Today, I got a couple of things that, like, one, you're like, I put my doctor up here on this pedestal. And that stuck out to me, where sometimes we do. We put these people on this pedestal, and sometimes that means we're like, oh, they're up here, we're good, we're taken care of, and we don't need to educate ourselves. Or we say, oh, they've got us, and then something switches, right? And it's great to have confidence in our providers and put them on this pedestal of confidence. But I wanted to remind everybody too, like, put yourself up on that pedestal. Your confidence, like, believe in your ability to do this just as much as you believe in your provider or your doula or your birth partner or whoever may be on your team. Put yourself up on that.
We're the ones doing it, right? It's like, they,
yes,
but we can do this.
Yes.
We're the ones in this. So we can have all the support and help, but yeah, that's so true. Just put ourselves up there and to know these people are there to help, but we're the only
one. Look who's doing it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's fine to put those people up on those pedestals, but just, yeah, like, make sure you put yourself up there too, because you're incredible. Your ability to birth a baby, no matter how it unfolds too. I had a visit the other day with a client who had a cesarean, and then she had a VBAC, and then some things unfolded and she decided to schedule another cesarean, or not schedule, but go in for a C-section. And she's like, I've experienced it all. It's like so crazy. And she's like, you know, I had the VBAC, but this is just what, and she was like talking about the strength of this VBAC. And then she kind of was like, yeah, now I had to do a C-section. I'm like, no, you're still amazing. You're still strong. Like, yeah. No. Like, you should be proud of yourself because you made the decision that felt right in the moment for that birth and that baby. But I do feel like sometimes we put ourselves down here on the lower pedestal when we need to actually give ourselves some more credit. And then another thing that stood out to me was the talk about prodromal labor. It is a thing. In fact, in your form, what you said is prodromal labor is a real thing and happens more than you realized. And it does. It does happen. And a lot of the times it is due to a fetal position or sometimes dehydration too. We are dehydrated. We're not getting those electrolytes and our uterus is hypersensitive. So if you do have prodromal labor, try to get some hydration, really fuel your body with its nutrients. But also, I suggest checking out a chiropractor or an acupuncturist. And I want to say, even if you go, that doesn't mean it's going to change it, but it can maybe help get baby's position, I don't want to say fixed like something's broken, but in a more ideal position to hopefully kickstart that labor. But do all the things you can to rest when the prodromal labor is not happening. And if you're like Caitlin, where it just keeps going and keeps going and keeps going, you know, take advantage of the breaks that you have. There's like cramp bark and some other things that, like tinctures that sometimes midwives will suggest. So You can also check into those and ask your provider. But prodromal labor is a real thing, and it is so exhausting, and it can be very defeating when you're like, I'm contracting, but I'm not dilating. What is going on? But there is a lot. Even if you're not dilating, there's a lot going on, guys. Your cervix may be coming a little bit more forward. It may be thinning out just a slight bit. And even though it's not dramatic where you're like, oh, you were 50, now you're 70%. It could be like that. But even if it's not like that, that doesn't mean your body's not working, your baby's not working with you. Like, you guys are an incredible team and you are incredible, but do what you can to rest and give yourself some grace, because it is absolutely exhausting.
Yeah, I feel like if I did not have that, even though it was maybe 5-6 hours of waking
that
up
next day,
if I didn't have that just to have a few naps, I can almost guarantee you that I would not have been able to make it through the next 12 hours of active labor.
Mm-hmm.
Just that little bit of rest, if you can rest, you know, like for me, I had no breaks really in between these contractions for so long. And I know that some moms can have contractions that aren't as intense, but, you know, are like an hour apart. Like, take advantage of that and just try to, like you said, rest up and feed your body good food and electrolytes.
Yeah. And it's easy to want to be like, oh my gosh, they're starting, they're going. Like, let's do things to encourage them, which in the end can make us really exhausted, right? Yeah. And so, even though it's tempting and it's exciting to like go out and curb walk and go out and do these things and whatever, try to rest, try to take advantage of that time and truly rest, because there is a point where your labor will turn into that active phase and you're going to need the strength and the energy. Yes. Well, Caitlin, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your stories and your advice. You are incredible. I'm so happy for you. And I do know that you will be inspiring.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an honor.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.